go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this, the last show for, well, until Monday, Valentine's Day, the 14th of February. As you know, we will be going abroad, shall we say, as of Saturday morning. We are all really looking forward to this trip. Can't tell you how much we are looking forward to it, but it should be noted that while there will be enjoyment, that it is impossible for this family to go anywhere without trying to let people know about the Appalachian apocalypse in which we live. And so a big component of this journey will be to try to open eyes and open minds and open ears about the nature of what we face in the resource colony that is almost level West Virginia. And having said that, I'll say also, gonna miss you guys. Gonna miss you guys bad.
So will I. I'm gonna be with him. Oh, Lord.
You got to speak up when you're talking into the Mikey phone, Agnes.
But I don't have a loud voice.
Yeah, you said your little mouse.
Yeah, I'm going to be trapped at sea with Bob, and he's going to throw me to the shark. I know this.
No, I will not. She's going to swim with the dolphins, and that is not some sort of mafioso euphemism. She'll probably call them up. She's been working on that for a while.
I'd rather swim with the dolphins than deal with the Board of Education.
Ain't that the truth? Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But off the top, from the beginning, there's no way... don't correct the wifey, Bob. Thanks, Psychoticus Rex. Sound advice. Sound advice indeed. We begin the program, of course, with the chaos in Egypt. It's what kind of a word do you use? Exciting? No, it's not exciting. Terrifying? I think terrifying is appropriate. If you have a scintilla of empathy for your fellow humans, to see those skull-cracking Mubarak thugs barreling through peaceful protesters on horse and camelback, wielding lashes and whips, throwing Molotov cocktails into concentrated masses of humanity, you shudder, and you understand for a moment, perhaps better than you ever could have, how fascists behave. Because make no mistake, this is why these thugs, these bully boys, these skull crackers, these kneecappers, the reason they have marched out today, it all explains the reasoning behind the appointment of Monsieur Suleiman as vice president. Remember, he's a skull cracker and a kneecapper and a whip wielder from way back. When Dick Cheney needed to talk to somebody about torturing someone in a foreign land so as to hide out from the language of the law of the United States of America, he talked to Mr. Suleiman. And Dick Cheney said, "Make it so." And Mr. Suleiman said, "It will be so, my dark prince." You may have heard a couple of nights ago, was it last night? I'm not sure. It all runs together after a while. You may have heard me referencing the absolute imperative of nonviolence in problem solving. And if you have been watching the Egypt story unfold over the last 24 hours, perhaps you get a better working understanding for why nonviolence is the only answer. There is no doubt to me whatsoever, granted I'm speculating, that the same skullcrackers and kneecappers who went through the crowds today, in which at least three are dead and probably more, and some at least 639 people lie injured, there's no doubt to me that that's more of Mubarak and Suleiman's secret police working in, shall we say euphemistically, plain clothes. Do you have any doubt? I don't. And the purpose of the violence is to try to incite violence from the other side. Because the instant that peaceful protesters become violent, fascists have an opportunity and an excuse to, as Shakespeare said, let slip the dogs of war. And of course, the government has most of the bullets and almost all of the guns. This is not an argument for American-style Wild West gun ownership. We spent too much time last night on the mother who easily obtained a .38 caliber pistol and blew away her teenage children for being mouthy, for this to be an argument in favor of an armed populace. Answering violence with violence breeds only more violence. An eye for an eye, and the world goes blind, as the saying goes. And yet the Mubarak supporters, the skullcrackers and the kneecappers, the throat slitters and the backstabbers, are counting on the fundamental human inability not to respond with violence to violent acts. It is an age-old story that only the greatest of humanity have the ability to counteract and countervail with good counsel and wisdom. If you have seen the Molotov cocktails raining into crowds, if you have seen the lash and whip wielding horse-backed thugs driving through crowds, then you understand how difficult it is not to respond with violence. And you understand the truth of what I said a couple of nights ago, that nonviolence is not passivity. I was taught literally at my mother's knee, gone now, these 13 and a half years, that it takes more courage to stay out of a fight than to get into one. Because she was a hillbilly girl and had grown up amidst the violence of the hills and had been transplanted to a culture no less prone to violence than the one in which she had grown up, having been transplanted south to Alabama. Nonviolence is not for the faint of heart, but it is the only thing that will bring freedom to the Egyptian people, who never in the long history of that people, a history longer than that of most other humans on the planet, a culture that extends some 7,000 years, you understand, or do you, the yearning to be free of a people who in all that time never have been, never have been? But there are some, what, regressive fascist thugs who have enjoyed their days in the sun with the balmy winds upon their faces, and who are loath to give up power and privilege in the face of the yearnings of people to, in the words of Emma Lazarus, breathe free. It has been repeated around the world, whether it is the British troops marching upon and gunning down nonviolent protesters led by Gandhi in India, or whether it is the fire hoses and attack dogs of Bull Connor at the end of a bridge in Selma, Alabama. Or whether it is hillbilly men desperate for some human dignity and trying only to organize their labor and their right to control their labor in the hills of central Appalachia. Violence was the answer of the money and the fascists and the power in every instance, and it always is. But if there will be a dawn of freedom in Egypt, it will have to be a dawn of freedom that breaks upon an Egypt that has turned its back on the horrors of violence and civil war. You will forgive me, I hope, my incessant reference to history, but it was stirred again today when I saw the footage of those horses and those camels riding through the streets of Cairo. For so it has always been with the power and the money. There were two royal pieces accoutrements to power among the pharaohs. You see them on the crossed chest of the gilded sarcophagus of Tutankhamun and the carvings that were left behind those thousands of years ago. They are the crook and the flail. The crook is the crooked staff that the shepherd uses to guide his sheep. The flail is the whip that a ruler uses when those subject to his whim cease to to please him and have to be driven into line. It was the first thing I thought of when I saw the footage of those whip-wielding thugs, the crook and the flail of Pharaoh of old. One of the oldest tales that English-speaking people have, by virtue of their co-opting of it from another people, an older people, the Hebrew people of old and modern Jewry, is the story of Moses. And back around Christmas time, with no idea that this was going to break, this story, we talked a little bit about the role of hero in human society, and noted the fact that the well-to-do and the powerful and the moneyed and the comfortable never need a hero. It is the downtrodden. It is the abused. The people who live with daily horror and oppression for whom the hero stands, and most often from whom the hero rises. And so it was in the myth of Moses that those 3,000 or so years ago, he stared Pharaoh in the eye and said, "Let my people go." But Pharaoh's heart was hard. Time and again, Pharaoh's heart was hard. So the story goes. And it's hard not to look at the footage of Hosni Mubarak and not see the countenance of Pharaoh, and not see upon his head the twin crowns of Upper and Lower Egypt, the coiled cobra about his brow that is known as the Uraeus, and not to see in his crossed arms the crook which he has abandoned and the flail which he now wields by proxy upon innocent protesters. So it is, so it has been, so let it be put to an end, and the Egyptian people be forevermore free of the abuse of monarchs, tyrants, despots. The Ptolemies, who were no more Egyptian than I am an Eskimo, adopted the outward trappings of Pharaoh, including the crook and the flail. And over 200 years plus, showed no compunction in killing offhand any native Egyptian who would attempt to breathe free. And it is stunning to me to contemplate that it has been so down through the ages. Until now. And now, we finally get a chance to see if the Egyptian people can be free. But you see, fascists don't understand anything but the abuse of power. That is why they are called fascists. Benito Mussolini adopted the Fascase. You want to see a Fascase? This has nothing to do with Glenn Beck, but you've probably got a representation of it in your pocket. Do you have a dime in your pocket? Pull it out and look at the reverse. there are a twin pair of Fosques. Oh, no, I think there's only one. Oh, damn it. I'm going to have to get a dime. Dig, dig, dig. Ow, that's a key. Ow. Oh, I hope there's a dime in here. There it is. Yeah. There is a Fosques in the center of the reverse on the U.S. dime. With a torch atop it. It was a bundle of rods with an axe in the middle, and it was carried by the lictors. Lictors were the bodyguards of ancient Roman officers of state. Depending on how high up you were, you got a certain number of lictors. If you were consul in the Republic, you got 12, and it went downward from there. Caesar, when he was named dictator for life, obtained a cadre of 24 lictors, but dismissed them shortly before he was assassinated by the moneyed and powered elite of ancient Rome. And so it was that Benito Mussolini adopted the Fosques as the symbol of his authoritarian movement. And his bully boys behaved no less disgustingly than those of Hosni Mubarak. The beatings were regular and routine in the rise of fascist Italy, just as the beatings are regular and routine, as we have seen in the last day, in this the last throes of a brutal fascist dictatorship in Egypt. It is fascism. The lictors of ancient Rome were empowered. Should anyone attempt to offend the official for whom they stood guard, to use the rods and axes to defend the body of the official at all costs. It was routinely abused toward the end of the Republic. But I want to emphasize again that this is how fascists behave. This is typical fascist conduct. Fascists are the same the world over. And they are uniformly violent and uniformly dedicated to the maintenance not of the state but of their own power within it. So as we watch Egypt, I think we would be well advised. Well, first of all, I think CNN would be well advised to send Anderson Cooper back to New York. It's one thing for him to stand to come to a holler in West Virginia when a mine blows up, or to stand on the Gulf Coast talking about Calliope music as a well pumps grim death into the waters of the Gulf of Mexico. Anderson Cooper has no business in Egypt. He should leave and go back to what he's good at, you know, interviewing Lindsay Lohan and the like. But journalists have been put to the whip, stabbed, beaten. Anderson Cooper said he was beaten several times about the head, and yet I saw video footage of him, and there was no shiner. He wasn't swollen. I think he just got scared enough to wet himself and sort of worked on it from there. But we are watching. The world watches. And most of the world, civilized, holds out great hope for the freedom of the Egyptian people. Some of us, we few, understand what they are up against. Some of us, we few, have the courage to name the demon that stalks Egypt, and it is fascism. Just because you don't have some spiffy uniforms and march goose step and are led by a guy, a little short man with a Charlie Chaplin mustache, doesn't mean fascists no longer exist on the face of the planet. Fascism is alive and well in Egypt, as we see. I want to share something with you. I've mentioned my grandfather a number of times. He had his failings. Probably chief among them being his membership in the Ku Klux Klan for a period of time. You know, he was a member of the Klan, like Harry Truman was a member of the Klan, like Robert Byrd was a member of the Klan, like lots of white people were members of the Klan. And he was some sort of 32nd degree noble exalted Turk, you know, the noble lumpkin, exalted pish posh, eminent dragon, Kliegel, whatever. But he also tried to be a man of some learning. And I have a pair of books that come down to me from my grandfather. They were they're a pair of books by a group called the Roycrofters. And the Roycrofters were led by a man named Elbert Hubbard. They were a craft commune society of the late 19th and early 20th century. Elbert Hubbard wrote stirringly of the victims, among other things, of the victims of the sinking of the Titanic. 3 years later, he himself would die in the sinking of the Lusitania. But one of the things that he collected, and which at considerable expense for a relatively young man who had not much money, he produced a couple of books, and one of them is called The Scrapbook, Elbert Hubbard's Scrapbook. It's exquisitely printed, published, and bound. We still have it. And my mother tells me that he would spend long nights reading to the family from Elbert Hubbard's scrapbook. And I was thinking about my grandfather the other night, and trust me, this really, really does have a bearing on the whole subject at hand. It's all context. But I was thinking about my grandfather the other night, and I was thinking about, and that led me to think about Elbert Hubbard's scrapbook, and I found it online via the Internet Book Archive. Mercy, there's some wonderful stuff out there. But Elbert Hubbard's scrapbook is a book that he put out, a collection of people writing things that he thought valuable, whether it be a poem by John Burroughs or Richard Le Gallienne, or comments by Seneca, pieces by H.G. Wells, Turgenev. If I may, why it is that fascists behave as they act, or behave as they do. It's instructive, this particular piece, which, if it has disappeared, is going to prove very upsetting to me. Victor Hugo wrote it, and it has to do with a bee. A bee. Let me see if I can get it going here. For some reason, my internet just crashed. But we're back. Don't panic. Elbert Hubbard collected in his scrapbook The other evening, I was a little late in going down to dinner, and this was the reason. I noticed a number of dead bees, lying on the floor of the lookout where I am accustomed to work, a sight that I encounter every spring. The poor things had come in through the open window. When the windows were closed, they found themselves prisoners. Unable to see the transparent obstacle, they had hurled themselves against the glass panes on all sides, east, north, south, and west, until at last they fell to the floor, exhausted, and died. But yesterday I noticed among the bees a great drone, much stronger than the bees, who was far from being dead, who in fact was very much alive, and was dashing himself against the panes with all his might, like the great beast that he was. "Ah, my fine friend," said I, "it would have been an evil day for you had I not come to the rescue. You would have been done for, my fine fellow. Before nightfall you would be lying dead, and on coming upstairs in the evening with my lamp, I would have found your poor little corpse among those of other bees. Come now, like the Emperor Titus, I shall mark the day by a good deed. Let us save the insect's life. Perhaps in the eyes of God a drone is as valuable as a man, and without any doubt it is more valuable than a prince." I threw open the window, and by means of a napkin began chasing the insect toward it. But the drone persisted in flying in the opposite direction. I then tried to capture it by throwing the napkin over it. When the drone saw that I wished to capture it, it lost its head completely. It bounded furiously against the glass panes, as though it would smash them, took a fresh start, and dashed itself again and again against the glass. Finally, it flew the whole length of the apartment, maddened and desperate. "Oh, you tyrant," it buzzed. "Despot! You would deprive me of liberty! Cruel executioner! Why do you not leave me alone? I am happy, and why do you persecute me?" After trying very hard, I brought it down, and in seizing it with the napkin, I involuntarily hurt it. Oh, how it tried to avenge itself! It darted out its sting, its little nervous body contracted by my fingers, strained itself with all its strength in an attempt to sting me. But I ignored its protestations, and stretching my hand out the window, opened the napkin. For a moment, the drone seemed stunned, astonished. And then it calmly took flight out into the infinite. Well, you see how I saved the drone. I was its providence. And so it is with us. We have our petty and absurd projects, our small and narrow views, our rash designs, whose accompaniment is either impossible or injurious to ourselves, seeing no farther than our noses, and with our eyes fixed on our immediate aim, we plunge ahead in our blind infatuation like madmen. We would succeed, we would triumph, that is to say, we would break our heads against the invisible obstacle. Well, there you go. That is the fascist mind in a nutshell. Consider, just as Victor Hugo wrote all those years ago, consider the teabagger who wrote, "You not leave me alone! I am happy, and why do you persecute me?" And all this over a simple effort to ensure that not only the teabagger, but others as well, might have something as necessary to life as the world beyond that pane of glass was to the bee, as health care, just health care. But we should be reminded that there are fascists all over this planet. We should be reminded that in Egypt, the idiots, the vile, violent, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing idiots flailing at their fellow citizens from horseback, the people in the public square want freedom for them too. Because unless all are free, none are. There is no free society that holds any portion of its body politic less free than others. And how great that truth we see in so many facets of everyday life. For instance, right now we are focused on Egypt. And yet, here in America, the land of the free, we frequently sing, and the home of the brave. You know, when I was a little boy, I used to sing, I at first thought that they only sang that song at Atlanta baseball games. The land of the free and the home of the braves. But apparently, I'm not the only one ever to mistake that. There was a little girl, story is told of a little girl who was a recent immigrant from Asia, learning the Pledge of Allegiance. And with her limited ability to understand the English language at that time, which in a child is limited in the first place, and in an immigrant child is even more so, taught upon entry into the public school system to say the Pledge of Allegiance, she said what was important to her and what her ear heard. At the end of the pledge, she routinely said what she thought her classmates were saying. One nation, under God, with little tea and just rice for all. But here in the United States, we cloak our fascism largely in money and in television programs delivered digitally to TV sets across the fruited plain. And the fascism is maintained by right-wing billionaires who do not mind what they spend and never count the cost, because they understand the value of maintaining their status quo, their fascist status quo. I'm sure you followed over the weekend in and amongst the coverage of Egypt, some of the coverage of the billionaire and millionaire meeting sponsored in California, Riverside, California, I believe it was, by the Koch brothers, multi-billionaires. Their father provided the startup capital that gave rise to the John Birch Society. And they have followed in daddy's footsteps by funding everything from teabaggers to right-wing think tanks to media empires. In an article at Alternet today, there is this. Kenneth Vogel reported today on the Koch brothers' larger media strategy. It apparently involves an aggressive public relations effort reaching out to reporters to shape their Koch coverage. Reaching out to reporters to shape their Koch coverage. reaching out to reporters means paying some off and threatening the livelihoods of others. It apparently involves an aggressive public relations effort reaching out to reporters to shape their Koch coverage while using, quote, a private security detail to play, quote, hardball with critics and suspected foes. In particular, Kenneth Vogel noted the events in California over the weekend with Koch paid guards tracking resort guests deemed suspicious and erecting a blockade to prevent cameras from filming arriving guests. Inside the resort at the beginning of the conference, there was an atmosphere almost of paranoia, said Gary Ferdman, a Common Cause official. Ferdman had reservations at the resort and stayed there Thursday and Friday night. He said he was told Saturday that his lunch reservations at the resort restaurant had been canceled and was urged to check out and leave promptly by a member of Koch's large security detail. Security manned security. Notice the euphemism. We're talking about hired thugs. In the struggle for basic human decency in the Appalachian coal fields of the early 20th century, that's what they were called. The Baldwin-Felts Detective Agency were simply known as Baldwin thugs. And so, too, this private security. No, they were thugs. Ferdman was urged to check out and leave promptly by a member of Koch's large contingent of thugs. Thugs manned every doorway and stairwell near the ballrooms where Koch events were held and threatened to jail this Politico reporter while he waited in line at the resort's cafe after he stopped by a Koch conference registration table. The resort grounds were closed for a private function, the resort's head of security, James Foster, told Politico, ushering the reporter outside, where private security guards, read thugs, wearing gold lapel pins bearing Koch's K logo, threatened a citizen's arrest and a night in the Riverside County Jail if the reporter continued asking questions and taking photographs. That isn't Cairo. That is Riverside County, California, United States of America. Praise God. And those are the words of Steve Bannon. And it isn't all. Consider this. You know that Jimmy Carter wrote a book called Peace Not Apartheid, Palestine, Peace Not Apartheid. Well, the fascists hope to make him pay for having done so. Because in right-wing America, there is no such thing as freedom of conscience for anyone save those whom they think that freedom should apply. Oh, if a little teenage girl shows up at your pharmaceutical counter and you're a right-wing evangelical Christian pharmacist and she is literally bleeding in a healthcare emergency, you can claim conscience and deny her necessary prescribed medication prescribed by a physician lawfully enabled to do so. You may deny her that medication and claim conscience that you don't support abortion and you don't want to inadvertently support any spontaneous abortions as the blood runs down her legs. I'm not making this up. It really happened recently. You can claim conscience and tell the child to go and die because you're doing what your conscience bids and because you know that it's what God wants. Because God, organized religion, especially the fundamentalist kind, always goes hand in glove with fascism. Whether it be fundamentalist Islam, fundamentalist Christianity, or fundamentalist anything else. I'm reminded of the story a couple of years ago in which Jains, J-A-I-N, in India, who will not eat certain foods for fear that they might injure an insect, firebombed restaurants in India because they were deemed to be serving meat too near to a Jain temple. Freedom of conscience is a one-way street in the fascist world. And you know what? I'm sick to death of words like right-wing, teabagger, Republican. Bull! The applicable word for these authoritarian miscreants, these misanthropes, is fascist. And if I fail to refer to them appropriately as fascists, I hope you will take time to drop me a line and say, "Oh, Bob, you're getting the language wrong again." Do please. So Jimmy Carter wrote a book called Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. And for that, he has been vociferously condemned by the fascists. See, I almost said right wing. Now, a publication called Tablet reports, yesterday, a class action was filed in Manhattan federal court accusing Jimmy Carter and the publishing house of Simon & Schuster of consumer fraud for the former president's 2006 book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. It alleges that the author and publisher marketed the book as a totally factual account of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, in part based on the credibility of a former president and key character in the history, but that the book actually contains, in the words of the lawsuit papers, demonstrable falsehoods, omissions, and knowing misrepresentations designed to promote Carter's agenda of anti-Israel propaganda. I ain't kidding. Simon & Schuster, Tablet continues, Simon & Schuster, the case alleges, has refused to issue corrections despite, quote, irrefutable proof that key reporting in the book, which is extremely unpopular with many pro-Israel groups, does not tell the truth about events such as the 1949 and 1967 ceasefires and the 2000 negotiations at Camp David. Tablet continues, the book was controversial when it was published in part because of the title's deployment of the A word, you know, apartheid, which has since become a much more accepted part of the discourse. Jimmy Carter is being sued for money damages for his act of conscience in criticizing the oppression of one of the most put upon peoples on the planet, the Palestinians. In any court of competent jurisdiction, with a competent jurist, this lawsuit would be bounced out on its ass, and the lawyer chastised and warned against ever filing such acts of manifest frivolity again. But this is America, where we have fascists no less than they do on the streets of Egypt. absent the Molotov cocktails and the whips and the horses. Never mind the fact that a disgruntled, disaffected man with a trunkload of explosives was stopped in the nick of time from trying to blow up a mosque in Dearborn, Michigan that had 500 mourners at a funeral in it. And Jimmy Carter and Simon & Schuster will spend money defending this wholly frivolous lawsuit. Because in the United States of America, conscience is something that only fascists may have. But we're not done. There's more. Do you remember the Acorn videos? Do you remember the rubed up, faked up, ginned up, dummied up videos that James O'Keefe produced that destroyed Acorn, an organization that has done more good for more poor people in this country than almost any other? Sure you do. The fascists of the anti-choice movement are at it again, and they are following the James O'Keefe, Andrew Breitbart model. There's an anti-abortion group, anti-choice, anti-woman group called Live Action. And yesterday they released a James O'Keefe, Andrew Breitbart-style video that allegedly, purportedly showed employees of Planned Parenthood assisting sex traffickers. Heard this plot before? Yeah, because it's exactly the same plot that James O'Keefe used in his little hack job on Acorn. Of course, being fascists, the truth ain't in them. And so it is that while they have put out their scurrilous video for which no Manhattan lawyer is suing them, as Jimmy Carter is being sued, and of course they made these spurious allegations. And fascists are of course liars, because what actually happened was that Planned Parenthood reported the people who came to their offices, reported them to the FBI. And yes, who promoted this story, this video by the group Live Action? Yes, again, Andrew Breitbart, a rising star in the fascist glitterati. So too did Glenn Beck's The Blaze also promote this outright lie. Do you see? Does it all sort of begin to become incredibly, sickeningly clear? Because it sure does for me. Don't think for an instant that there isn't a line that runs from the fascists in the United States to the fascists in Egypt and elsewhere. Because there most assuredly is. they behave predictably. Whether it be the teabaggers who bang their heads against the window panes and squeal and squall and scream about liberty, when in fact we are trying merely to provide them the liberty to stay alive. By not having their cholesterol and plaque-laden veins rebel against them and drop them dead on the pavement in the middle of some teabagging rally. No. Or whether it be fascists who somehow manage to survive even when freedom comes. It is the curse of fascism that plagues humanity, and for which we must always be on guard. Because it never goes away. Because no matter what century in which you operate, there is always a Mubarak. There is always a Cheney. There is always, always, always someone who is ready to cry, "Hail to the flag, hail to the God, hail to the nation, and to hell." To hell. And there is only one way of which I am aware to counter it. And it cannot and must not involve guns, bullets, bombs, whips, or rods and axes. It can only be countered by nonviolence, because the fascists always win when the oppressed and the downtrodden try to return like for like, kind for kind, and an eye for an eye. It's the only hope there is. It is the only hope there is. I hope you didn't tune in tonight hoping to hear some sort of giggling program anticipating a merry jaunt. I'm afraid I've proven myself incapable of that. If you did, I apologize. We will have your conversation. We will have more stories. We will have a bit of a farewell. I'm not kidding when I say I'll miss you. But you know what? Valentine's Day is coming up, and then something very special on the 15th of February is coming up. The following day, we will have one of those wonderful history sessions hosted by Dr. Bill O'Brien, live. And it's another one of those key components. One of the reasons I'm so excited to work with Dr. Bill on this is because the actual teaching of history, the actual learning of history, is one of those key components that we have in battling back the fascists who would rewrite it even and make the words disappear from the pages of history even as we try to read them. So that's coming up. It is, where did the hour go? Well, what a filibobster. Nonetheless, we'll be back. Check into the mailbag. Your calls are welcome, of course. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And this is, in fact and indeed, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Took the Union Jack, and Maggie over lunch one day took a cruiser with all her hands, apparently to make him give it back.
Thank you.
time is time. Now solution can be applied.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Soldier, a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
Buy a soldier, a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
Do something sweet for the troops. Choose from a selection of Bubble Genius bath and body products, and we'll send them to soldiers overseas on your behalf. The holidays are coming up. Buy a soldier a shower.
BubbleGenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Wow, there's something about that last hour that sort of took something out of me. My apologies. I'm feeling a little creepy. Maybe it's talking about fascism that does that to me. Maybe. Yeah, I know it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and I didn't do the prayer meeting Wednesday shtick. Sorry. Somehow, you know, the fun and frivolity that often accompanies regularly scheduled iterations of this program kind of go by the board. This is one of those nights. Going to the email bag, Jack in Shreveport writes, Bob, you said something to the effect that there is no freedom if everyone isn't free. Couldn't quite grab all of your words in my memory, but it reminded me of a line that was something like, but some are more equal than others. Was that Animal Farm? It's been so long since I read that book, and I can't recall the context of how the line is used in the book, if that was where the line was from. But if I recalled correctly, maybe there's a similarity? Well, yeah. Because, again, Orwell in Animal Farm is describing a totalitarian regime. And he uses an uprising or a revolution inside, among the farm animals as his metaphor. And if I recall correctly, it's all pigs are free, because remember there's a power struggle between two pigs. One of them is Snowball. I can't remember the other one. Wow. I actually had to read that in high school. Can you imagine American high schoolers not even having to, but getting to read Animal Farm anymore? But there's a power struggle among the pigs, and if I recall correctly, it winds up, the statement being made is, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs. And that is a dictatorial, authoritarian response to concepts of human rights and human equality. I am sure that if you asked Hosni Mubarak, he would tell you that all Egyptians are equal. But some Egyptians are more equal than others, and the ones that are more equal tend to be those in his cadre of blood and death. The same, of course, in this far more economically unequal country than Egypt is, by about twice the number. The same applies here. All men are created equal. Oh, the teabaggers practically masturbate when they read that. But from the moment that that was written, all men were not created equal. The fact that it says all men and not all people sort of implicitly notes the fact that there was no equality for the women of the fledgling United States in 1776, nor would there be to this day. The inequality persists. And 3/5 of some human beings were created equal, but those 3/5 weren't nearly as equal as the white males. Not just white males, the propertied white males. See how it works? Yeah, thanks, Jack. Also from the mailbag, yes, thank you. I do know that my stream was going in and out, and I don't know why, and I hope it's settled down for the rest of the evening. Jim, advising me to watch out for icebergs. You never know. You just never know. I take no pride in saying this, but one of the questions, because I forget which channel it is, but one of the cable channels has been running James Cameron's Titanic in an almost constant, endless loop, which, for some reason, my children took to. And my youngest, Doodle, asked me, in all the earnestness that she could muster, "Daddy, will there be any icebergs?" To which I replied, "Honey, only floating in my drink that is poured in a hollowed-out coconut shell and has an umbrella sticking out of the top." That seemed to calm her somewhat. David in South Carolina, one of the Davids, one of the earliest of the Davids, says, commenting on Anderson Cooper, subject line, "Anderson and Real Housewives. One night as I surfed by CNN, I heard Anderson Cooper say, 'I love me some Housewives of Beverly Hills.'" This happened, David notes, in the midst of the Tucson Massacre. Remember the Tucson Massacre, Anderson? The Tucson Massacre has gone silent, as if it never happened, per usual. And our blogger, Texas Betsy, kindly affords me a little bit of optimism. She tells me that her beloved son, Textane, actually read Animal Farm last year in 10th grade honors English. She notes, of course, that that was in the socialist mecca of Austin, Texas. And then this. I got this earlier today from our buddy Tom out in California. Tom has been among that small group of people, and I can list them on probably one and no more than the fingers of two hands, who have regularly made sure that this this attempt at broadcasting, this attempt at creating liberal media, did not simply vanish for want of the funds to keep it going. And he's done that for years, along with a very small handful of other people. And I trust you know who you are. But Tom dropped me a note earlier today, and I have to share it with you. Because, well, it's awesome. Tom writes, "I just listened to Monday's podcast and wanted to say how pleased I am that we," and he puts in bold, "we, all of us, reached the fundraising goal for January. Not because I mind the pitches. I don't. But because the show is so important." Tom says, "I've been listening for a long time, at least 5 years, and I don't remember if there has ever been a month in which the bills were adequately met. So today I'm going to get some bucks in the mail to get February started because I know that your well-deserved week off won't help with the funding. And that's the truth, Tom. Sadly, it will dry up like the fluff on a dandelion pod. Tom says it'll be $200 to be used as follows: $100 for the horn, and $100 to treat you, Agnes, and the kids to something fun of your choice on an island. Tom says you mentioned that Agnes will be calling the dolphins. Does anywhere you're going have a swim with the dolphins place? As a matter of fact, it does. When we're on, I believe, St. Thomas, you can. There's a transfer over to a dolphin sanctuary on St. John. And they've got one of those. Tom says, I will be willing my dolphin friends to visit, but you're not likely to see them from the ship, too high up. I have been privileged, says Tom, to commune with dolphins many times in my life, and they're my favorite animal. Once I sailed for the better part of a day through a vast convocation of several different species in the middle of the ocean, 1,000 miles from land. It was jaw-droppingly beautiful and spectacular. Thousands upon thousands of them jumping and playing from horizon to horizon. Then a piece of advice. Watch out for the food on the cruise ship, Bob. I went on an Alaska cruise once, courtesy of the in-laws. The food is overwhelming in its overabundance and availability. Lots of fat and lots of sugar. Don't want your insides to get riled up again. But have a great time. We want to hear all about it when you're back. And you will. You all will. There's so much that I can't even begin to imagine what it's going to be. As I said at the beginning of the program, we will be doing our advocacy because we don't go anywhere. We're like missionaries, I guess. We do missionary work wherever we go, trying to tell people about the horrors that are happening in their very own country, right under their very noses. About the 3.5 million pounds of high explosives that are used on just West Virginia, not Western Virginia, not Eastern Kentucky, not Eastern Tennessee, just the 3.5 million pounds that are used on West Virginia. By the time you add it all together, it's closer to 6 million pounds per day of high explosives used on the mountains of Central Appalachia that poisons our water and poisons our air and, yes, in fact, poisons our children and our future and makes communities disappear. And people die miserable, miserable, heart-rending deaths. Also, benighted teabaggers can walk out of the room and leave the damn lights on. We will be doing that. We can't not do it. It's hardwired into us. Oh, I can't wait to put on my Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt and walk around the ship. Or maybe the one that was kindly provided to us by the Waterkeeper Alliance that says clean coal is a dirty lie. And it is. And it is. They say that you can see whales from Grand Turk. I think I mentioned this during this time of year. I hope so. I hope so. And if they are to be seen, and the dolphins too, Tom and Agnes together will make them appear. And this email in just a little bit ago, right before showtime, from Alan in Missoula. First of all, I love your show and listen to it whenever I can, usually in the form of a replay on iTunes. I imagine that much of your attention today will be on the escalating situation in Egypt. However, I wanted to send a press release along from the office of Senator Max Baucus. I always knew that my senator's soul was a wholly owned subsidiary of some giant health insurance company. I had no idea there was still a portion left to sell to the coal industry. The scary bit about this proposed legislation is that it hides the dirty 800-pound gorilla of coal to liquid fuel behind the camelina-based biojet fuel. In fact, it would be really easy to miss the little detail about coal liquefaction. It's only mentioned once in passing. However, I would bet the title to my home that the bulk of the financial emphasis would not be placed on the agriculturally produced camelina-based biofuel. This is clearly another huge handout to the coal industry and the dirty bastards behind it. Thought you might find it interesting. If you did, didn't already know about it, take care. Thank you very kindly, Alan. The press release he sent along, oh yeah, this is a real bandy. I mean, this is restaurant quality legislative bribery. Headline: Baucus, Teaster, reintroduce Freedom Fuels bill to boost Montana jobs. Senator's legislation aims to reduce dependence on foreign oil, boost demand for Montana-made alternative fuels. Oh, God. I'm sure that Blanche Manchin, my new senator, will be on this like a duck on a June bug because, well, there just aren't enough of us here in Appalachia that have been poisoned yet. And what's another, you know, what's another hillbilly more or less, right? Hillbillies is hillbillies is hillbillies, and we is expendable. Baucus said, we're working hard to come up with fresh ideas to create new job opportunities in Montana while doing the right thing when it comes to energy independence. This legislation helps secure a stable demand for Montana-made camelina and coal-to-liquids fuels that will secure good-paying jobs. This is just one more way we can highlight Montana's strengths to boost our economy while working toward reducing our need to rely on foreign energy sources. My dad used to have a saying when he was highly frustrated. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. I think it's appropriate in this moment. Because in the middle of all this foolishness about coal to liquids, Senator Baucus and Senator Teaster neglect to mention that there is nowhere that coal is extracted from the earth that the communities near it and the people who make those communities are not subjected to massive infusions of incredibly toxic minerals and chemicals and heavy metals that literally end lives. You see, we can talk all day about the negative impacts of surface mining and coal mining, whether it be mountaintop removal or steep slope or deep pit or, you know, any of that stuff. You know, they do it down into they do pit mining, strip mining in Montana and the Powder River Basin of Wyoming, whereas here in Appalachia they just blow the hell out of the mountains and turn it into a moonscape. Either way you do it, however, you wind up with poison in your world. Most disgustingly, however, is that apparently Teaster and Baucus have co-opted the leadership, probably not the rank and file, but the leadership of an Indian tribe. The Crow Tribe and our industry partners through the Many Stars Project are uniquely situated to assist the United States in realizing the intent and vision behind the American Security and Freedom Fuels Act of 2011. Oh, my aching back. The Crow people. Well, if it's anything like what happened at Black Mesa in Arizona, it was a matter of bought-off tribal leadership who gladly sacrificed their the rank and file of their tribe in exchange for a bowl of cold porridge. American Security and Freedom Fuels Act of 2011. You know, we've got, obviously, listeners in Montana. We've got listeners in Montana. I know of two offhand. Alan and Kate. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the wind blow a lot in Montana? And when the wind's not blowing, isn't the sun frequently shining in Montana? I mean, it is on planet Earth, right? I mean, there were Indian treaties between the United States government and peoples who lived in Wyoming and the Dakotas and Montana and Idaho that said things like, this treaty will remain in force and effect as long as grass grows and wind blows and sun shines. None of those things ever stopped happening, to the best of my knowledge. The treaties were broken, shattered into a million pieces, and, hint, not by the Indian tribes. But none of those conditions subsequent ever stopped having effect. Wind blows. Grass grows. Rivers run. Sun shines. Screw that, say Max Baucus and John Teaster. Screw that! Because what we need is some... Wait a minute, I haven't memorized it yet. What we need is some American Security and Freedom Fuels Act of 2011. Jesus, criminy. Freedom Fuels? Really? We didn't make big enough asses of ourselves with Freedom Fries? At the risk of quoting, sort of getting trite and or maudlin by quoting him, I'm going to do it anyway, and just ask if this is one of those Kris Kristofferson moments where freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Because you know what? You build that coal to liquids plant in Montana, and they're building one or trying to build two or maybe a half a damn dozen in West Virginia. And something happens. Hint, not a good one. You do all that coal extraction, and water stops flowing. And instead, what used to be water begins to flow as toxic waste coal sludge. And grass stops growing, because grass don't grow on a moonscape. Oh, the wind blows. Certainly the wind blows. But those cleansing winds of the high country are no longer quite so cleansing. No, they carry particulated, microfine dust, silica, and the aerosolized remnants of ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives. Carcinogenic, I might add. And everybody gets to breathe it. And it doesn't matter how many miles lie between the source of the explosion and some population center. It's gonna get there. Neither rain nor snow nor gloom of night will stop the coal industry in making its poisonously appointed rounds. And round and around the whole blessed globe. Energy independence? There is no energy independence as long as that independence is predicated upon subservience to the predators of the American coal industry, digging it for all they're worth out of the ground, not even for American industry, but so that they can send vast quantities of it on slow boats to China, so that it can in turn be burnt there to create the miserable junk tchotchkes upon which the Walmart economy turns. And again, the winds, the once cleansing winds, can return the poisons and the toxins and the aerosolized carcinogens and the micronized particulate silica dust and the sulfur and the arsenic and the barium and the mercury and everything that goes into coal exhaust across the Pacific in great yellow clouds to land on the forests of Washington and Oregon and among the redwoods of Northern California and the vegetable farms of the beating heart of America's vegetable farming industry in the lower portions of California. Pardon me if I say thanks for nothing. Thanks for nothing to John Teaster and Max Baucus. Lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. Hey, what's happening?
Everybody must be asleep at the wheel.
I think I put him to sleep with that first hour, David. Sorry, my bad.
No, that's all right.
I'm getting my filibobster in because I know that I'm going to be for the next week.
Yeah, I understand that completely. Try not to have images of mountaintops blowing up when you look across the ocean. I'll think of tranquil thoughts for the whole week, and then you can.
Yeah, tranquil thoughts like all the BP Horizon oil laying on the ocean floor. Tranquil.
No, not like that. Sometimes you have to go to fantasy land, just like Fantasy Island.
Oh, you mean my Happy Gilmore happy place?
Yes. I mean, that's where you have to go. And
I will try. I will sit cross-legged on the floor with my thumbs touching my middle fingers, and I shall say, Om, and I will stare at my navel if I can see it from here.
Yeah, that's what you need to do. I think you hit the nail on. I wasn't going to talk about this, but I guess I'll jump in and give my thoughts on the whole energy thing. I think part of the problem is that our country doesn't want us to have energy independence because it's going to be a loss of serious revenue.
Right, and it's another case. It's another one of those places where if some aren't free, no one truly is. Energy independence that comes from coal is no independence because it will mean the enslavement of people in Montana, people in Wyoming, people in Jeff Bigger's beloved southern Illinois, the Black Mesa Dene people of Arizona, the hillbilly people of Appalachia, the southern folk of Alabama. It kind of goes on and on and on.
But part of the whole problem of this is whenever I have discussions with people who tend to come from the right wing or a business oriented perspective, fairly intelligent people, they always they're constantly indoctrinated into thinking that this world is to be spun and completely spin around the buzzword of productivity. And I think what we need to do in the future is we need to change productivity to creativity, because I don't really see a point. For myself, this is just myself speaking. I don't see a point in having productivity numbers. If we're doing good, which means, Bob, if everyone is eating and can supply to their family a proper income and a proper housing, that to me is more productivity.
That is productivity, David. You took the 12-penny nail. You took the hammer in your hand and you drove it in one stroke. That's the nail on the head. That's the definition not only of productivity, but of prosperity. Productivity is this buzzword that I wish to God liberals, progressives, whatever we care to call ourselves, would learn to just, the minute the word product, you know, the productivity numbers for America have never been higher. And I don't care if it's Barack Obama or Addison Mitchell McConnell saying it, stand up and say, shut the up with your productivity. Because productivity only means that American workers are working harder for less.
You know, that's interesting, because I just read an interesting article on the fact of workers facing burnout all around the world. I'll have to send it to you, but it was an interesting essay and analysis on what people are facing in the coming future. And that's part of the problem I have with Obama, and it's part of the problem I have with a number of the Democrats, is they want to, it's the buzzword again. They want us to increase our productivity. When I'm looking at myself and I'm like, I'm not interested in productivity. I'm interested in creativity. I'm interested in inspiration. I'm interested in motivation. And I don't give a damn about what the numbers are each quarter, because the reality is there is a time clock for when I am off this planet. And these numbers aren't gonna mean anything to me.
Right, and you know, in terms of the real world, David, also take into account that when we talk about productivity, that also takes into account inherently inside the number the fact. Well, you know how you boost productivity numbers by making sure that people stay at work longer and more days and more weeks and more months. So increased productivity just means that nobody gets a goddamn vacation anymore.
That's right, and they don't want you to have perfect example in a productive world. If everyone was productive, Bob wouldn't, in a productivity world rather, Bob wouldn't be taking this vacation. His family wouldn't take this vacation, because people just believe that we're just meant to work all the hours and come home, and that's our vacation. Hey, you turn on the TV, that's the vacation right there. Which is funny, because the people, here's the other thing, Bob, the people that talk about productivity, they suffer from inactivity. So why? we're going into the world of beyond contradiction here. And the fact that we don't bring that up, it's like, why are you always talking about productivity when you have a summer home? Why can't people just chill and relax and enjoy the spoils of their labors? Why is that? You know what the problem is? It's become a sin now. It's become a sin now for the working class and for people who are...
to have any leisure.
Right. But no leisure time.
And guess where that comes from, David? That is good old-fashioned, brutal-ass Calvinism at work.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, the idle hands of the devil's playground, all of that. It all comes to a head. And you know, it's a funny thing. I go on some of these economic forums, and people are always talking about productivity, and they're always talking about the quarters and the GDPs and all of that. And it's funny, because it's just constantly, hour after hour they spend, and these people have like 18,000 or 19,000 posts, and they debate the finer points, but it really comes down to this. Are you fucking happy?
Well, and remember the study from, what was it, last year that showed that the happiest people on the planet are the Danes? I mean, Jesus criminy, it's Denmark. Those people are freezing to death most of the year. I mean, you know, high July, the most you can hope for is long pants and maybe a short-sleeve shirt. And, of course, you know, again, I'm displaying my geographic ignorance. But, you know, it's not... The data that they gathered, they don't have more televisions than people, than the rest of the world. They don't have more computers. They don't have more... the smartphones, but they have easy access to transportation. They have universal health care. They have meaningful dialogue and discussion amongst themselves and their neighbors. And they occasionally, when it's not freezing outside, sit outside and stack teacups or coffee cups, coffee, Denmark, stack coffee cups and smoke bad cigarettes and drink, you know, some sort of probably anise-flavored liqueur and beer. They drink beer. And they're the happiest people on the planet.
And that's interesting, because the whole scam, the whole scam is we'll never meet their expectations. Never, no matter what we do. We could shit gold. Here's some gold bars we just shit out. That's good. Give us some more.
Yeah, can you do that twice as fast? And you know, that's one when we start talking about these productivity numbers, I find it fascinating because the last era in which productivity numbers were all the rage, and this certainly predates both you and I, but it doesn't predate some of the listeners in the audience. Once upon a time, the Soviet Union cranked out these things called 5-year plans. And they were, you know, in 5 years we will increase tractor production by X percent. And the way it worked, as I understand it, is that the inherent problem in that lay that, okay, your quota for tractors is set at 1,000 this year. And if you meet your tractor quota, the assumption was immediately made under the command economy model that you were dicking off somewhere along the way, and so your next year's quota got raised to 1,500. And it kept getting raised until you couldn't meet the quota anymore, and then they said that you were a damn slacker and sent you off to the gulag.
I mean...
Well, isn't that what goes on here? Oh, well, you know, all right, your productivity numbers are down, son. I think we're going to get some guy in Bangalore to do your job.
Well, you know, that was one of the things that really... Really ticked me off incensed me a little bit when Obama was talking about productivity was the fact that I know what it's like when you increase productivity because my grandfather was a casualty of that. I mean, he died at an early age because he believed in this productivity doctrine and this mantra. And people need to understand these buzzwords and don't fall for them, because if we do fall for them, we're going to have a burnout worse than the 1920s.
Let me see if I can find this real quick. Because if I can, I want to play it. Okay, bear with me a minute. You know, since you know the trip's coming up and everything, I've got Pink Floyd previously notwithstanding. I got Buffett on the brain. Can you afford me just a minute or so of Buffett for us to listen to it?
Play the whole song.
Okay, well, we only need one line, but I got to get to it. Stand by,
okay.
David.
All right.
Stashed his trash in Ecuador. Bought a good suit of clothes. Flew on up to Mexico. Standing by the shore, waiting for some mystery man to pay him for his time. Thinking about all the money he'd made couldn't help to ease his mind. A vanity dreaming, boy, he's just dreaming. Sugar cane, so one day he fell dead. Jesus had a wandering feeling swimming around in his head. Sailing on a midnight boat, there were no questions asked. The water so green and the air was so clean, he just stuck right to his task. Havana daydreaming, boy, he's just scheming his life away.
You know, David, there's two lines in there, actually. That, of course, is Havana Daydreaming by Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
There's two lines in there. One of them is, thinking about all that money he'd made couldn't help to ease his mind.
Mm.
The other one, though, is, his daddy chopped that sugar cane till one day he fell dead.
Mm.
You know what? That ain't Cuba. That ain't just the so-called third world. Because in line with what we've been saying about, you know, welcome to Haiti with cable, where the county grinds up the roads and turns them into gravel instead of paving them again and filling in the potholes, well, we're all going to... The goal, under the productivity model, as you raise it, David, the goal is to chop that sugar cane until one day we fall dead.
That is the goal, until we become actual fumes. fume people, fumes to run the engine. That's and you know what? If you really look at it, if you look at a lot of people, if you go into a major city or something like that, you can see that a lot of people are on autopilot right now.
No, I don't doubt it.
And but before I go, I just want to mention this. I remember when I was working in a music store, I had this person come in, and this has to do with this ties together with productivity and numbers and stuff like that. And he would come in, and all he would care about is what number Madonna was on the charts. One day I grabbed the billboard and I said, "Do you realize that it doesn't matter what chart number Madonna is, because she's still making millions of dollars, and she's going to make millions of dollars tomorrow, and she's going to make millions of dollars 10 years from now, and who really gives a shit what number she is?" And I said, "You keep faxing these charts, and they're not even real. All these chart numbers are rigged. It's all coordinated. It's all orchestrated for her to look like the biggest superstar diva of the planet. But the truth is this is all rigged. And Billboard, it's all a system of payola. It's all monopoly." And he just looked at me and he said, "Well, I just got to have the numbers." And that's when I realized, you know, there's some people you just can't get through. And with that, Bob, I want you, this is an order. I don't want you to look at any numbers. I don't want you to even concern yourself with any funding amounts or anything like that. I just want you to look at the ocean, and I want you and your family to have a great time. And I want you, I hope you can listen to that that Keith Richards and that Johnny Depp book that I sent.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right. Thank God. The technology gods have blessed us. And with that, I wish you a blessed vacation, and I look forward to hearing your story.
Well, thank you very, very much, David. And you know what? It will be a lot easier for me not to worry about numbers if I'm not scared to death that I'm going to come back here and be looking at a bunch of zeros. So thank you very much. But
I may have something in the works that may be able to help that when you return. We'll have to
talk some
about that.
All right, sounds good.
All right, Bob, later.
Take care, David. Bye now. Another member of the fraternity of David. That's David from Maine, our pop culture correspondent. And you know, the guy with the chart position of Madonna. There's another guy a generation and a half later who's doing the same thing, only it's Lady Gaga numbers. Ron in Raleigh just wrote in. He said, "Recently, while speaking to the 28-year-old who runs the food service at the small Christian college where I work, proudly proclaimed that he hadn't missed a day since starting with the company. I started to tell him that he was just setting himself up for big disappointments down the road. We now define ourselves by work and not interest. The corporations are winning the hearts and minds." And you know what? Having loads of money poured into that myth doesn't hurt. You know what I mean? It's kind of hard not to. But I said a long time ago, because it was in a conversation early in our marriage with Agnes, I said, "I'm going to define myself as me. I'm going to define myself as your husband. I'm going to define myself as the father of our children. I'm not going to define myself by my job. Because there won't be anybody talking about my job after I'm gone. But my children will tell their children whether or not I was a good father." And that's the truth. That's factual. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so, you know, it's funny you're talking about that Planned Parenthood, because it's just, they just produced this report that U.S. teen births falls to a record low, and they're saying it's, they're crediting contraceptive use, you know, and it's just kind of like, it is so depressing just hearing about the sort of never-ending assault on women's reproductive care and rights in this country. And when you read reports like this, you're like, yeah, how's that abstinence-only shit working for you?
Well, and you know what? It's, that statistic is kind of a bookend statistic, Sandra, because teen pregnancies and abortions generally among all classes of people fell during the Clinton administration.
Yeah, and I mean, you know,
they went and they all skyrocketed during the W administration.
Well, and if only again, I think part of it has to do with the economy. You know, people are just sort of a bit scared to pop out children if they're able not to. I mean, that's one thing. But also access to places like Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's just disgusting. It's just, I can't even believe it. There's Acorn. I mean, so they're going to try this on this organization now.
Yeah, and it's the same dodge. It's the same shtick. It's the same dirty lies. And it's the same cast of characters. Andrew Breitbart has found him a new James O'Keefe.
No, but the thing is, the Planned Parenthood, they're not dealing with it right either. That's the thing that's worrying to me. It's like they're scrambling. They should not be scrambling. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, they did the right thing. They turned they turned these freaks into the FBI.
Yeah, but, yeah, oh, I know. I just am sort of, you know, it's just a bit of a worry because, you know, the Acorn thing just sort of spiraled out of control without much help.
Right, and that was a case of, and again, who helped the Acorn thing to spiral out of control, Sandra? Oh, looky, the for-profit media. I know that Brad Friedman absolutely bulldoged this story,
and to this day
he hasn't gotten an apology out of the New York Times.
Oh no, it's incredible. But what I'm saying is, when I say with not much help, I mean with not much help on our side. You understand what I'm saying? We should have done so much more to defend Acorn, and we didn't. You know, and that's what happens. And so I don't want to see, you know, I would like to think that Planned Parenthood has more of a, a structure in place.
Right.
Withstand this, you know.
But yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, Barack Obama is not the only person who has resorted to the knee-jerk Shirley Sherrod the response.
Yeah, no. Anyway,
because everybody ran away from Acorn because everybody just, for some reason or another, is it because liberals and progressives expect the other side to tell the truth?
No, I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Are we gullible?
You know, I don't know, and you know, of course, I'm always a bit suspect about the progressive side because I see stories like Arianna Huffington wanting to start a black-only aspect of the Huffington Post. Have you heard about this?
No.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, it's a sort of Huffington Post-type thing.
Oh, yeah. Is she from, like, BET or something?
Yeah, and it's, you know, all that kind
Doesn't
of...
Doesn't BET have some problems?
Yeah, well, no, BET is horrible. It's called Bad Entertainment Television. It's a horror show. Any self-respecting, black-thinking person, that's a joke. That's like Minstrel Time, you know. It's every kind of horrible pathology that, you know, I can come up with.
Wasn't BET behind that awful cartoon, that awful cartoon video about Read a Book? Did you see it?
Oh, no. See, I don't know. I have to say I...
No, I saw that one.
In a way,
whoa.
I don't... you know, I'm really a bit disturbed by BET. But anyway, yeah, so this, you know, and so it's sort of like I'm not feeling that. I'm like, huh? You know, the last thing progressives and the black community, they don't need... that's not what's needed, you know. Ugh, I don't know. Just something about it is really disturbing to me.
Well, they're.
I understand.
Well, no, it's one of those green people moments because there's a lot of money over there, and you know, not black people, not white people, green people, the ones that are wrapped up in corporate cash.
Right. Well, and I'm not going to get on, you know, because I read the Huffington Post all the time. I just thought that was a bit of an odd project that she was working on, and I'm trying to figure out what is the point of it. You know what I mean?
I have a hypothesis.
Well, yeah, dude, no, tell me, because I have to say I am kind of a bit taken aback beyond my usual suspicions of the white progressives, but please.
Well, first of all, you know, I remember when I got hate mail for talking about Arianna. Jesus. But Arianna got a bunch of venture capital money out there and set herself up this little media empire of hers, and is, you know, as Daffy Duck would say, comfortably well off. But she did it by never paying the people who provided the content for her site. They're still not getting paid. And she's caught a lot of hell over that. So I think maybe this is a bit of a distraction. Well, look here, I'm setting up a interweb to make the internet more accessible for the black people. And sort of, you know, don't look what the right hand's doing. Oh, look at the birdie in the left, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, and to be honest, it's not really, you know, a crucial. I mean, I don't really care. I just, you know, I keep up with several black blogs and sites, and so, you know, that sort of popped up. I thought, ugh, that's interesting.
But it will rocket to the top, and the next thing you know, someone will be treating whoever the principal personality is there as a spokesperson for the black community.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because, you know, I always go back to when, you know, at one time in this country, the black paper was just pervasive. You know what I mean? It was everywhere. You had black papers all over the country. And it was, you know...
Yeah, the paper that was... there was a very famous one that was published in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. No, I mean... you know, the history of the black paper is interesting in itself, but you also have a presence on the internet, which thank you very much. It's okay. You see what I'm saying?
Isn't the internet as far as America is concerned? Isn't the internet still a really, really white phenomenon?
Well, it is, except for I told you about how black people are way overrepresented on the tweeting world.
No.
Which is so bizarre. Yeah, no, it was a survey or a study done or something that I clicked, you know, in the course of what I've been studying, and it was like, yeah, black people use Twitter like, I don't know, a huge percentage more than they are represented. So I just think that's really interesting.
I'd love to know the reasoning behind that.
Yeah, if I can dig out, you know what, I'll send that study to you. You might find it amusing to read anyway. I'll dig it up. But, the same thing with women. I mean, women, the presence of women is quite low. I think it's surprisingly low, you know?
Yeah, but when you do find women actively participating, there are some amazing ones out there.
Oh, yeah, no.
Ones, oh, shame on me. But no, I mean, some of the best voices in the progressive and liberal blogosphere are female voices. You know, I think about people like Caroli and Susie Madrack over at Crooks and Liars, just right off the top of my head. I've been reading a lot of Angry Black Lady blog.
Oh, yeah. No, but the thing is that thankfully, you know, the platform, you know what I mean? I can sort of find all sorts of interesting voices, you know? So it's not, I don't know, I just don't feel really bogged down by representation on the net. I'm more concerned about...
I think there is a much more palpable economic disparity on the net.
Yeah, I'm about to say I'm more concerned about property rights on the internet, actually. You know.
Yeah.
Like the radio stations, like the TV, we're having. That's the battle that should be being dealt with. And
it's being dealt with, and the right wing's dealing with it, and the Koch brothers are dealing with it, and the liberals and progressives are trying to figure out how much they can spend on donuts and emery boards this year. Sorry, yeah, I guess that just makes me a cynic, but...
Yeah, well, no, it's, you know, so I don't... I mean, I shudder at the thought of the landscape of the Internet just 5 years from now, you know? So I don't really know. But anyway, listen, what I wanted to ask you was, you know, wow, I mean, we have this sort of out-of-control situation in the Middle East, and then... We have us against the damn weather. Are you seeing this shit in this cyclone in Australia?
Well, yeah, and we're losing.
What the? And this 2,000-mile blizzard in America? Hello? What the hell?
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, it's kind of like a hurricane that originates at the North Pole, isn't it?
Well,
And the cyclone hitting Australia, you know, the biggest in history... But no, there's nothing funny going on with the climate. Nah,
No. Apparently, it's all about there's so much moisture in the air or some madness because of the global, you know, the global climate change. I mean, are we supposed to sit here and pretend, oh, this is just normal stuff? I mean, I was looking at the ABC News. They have it online now 24/7. No. That looked crazy. The size of it was like five times as big as Larry, which was the biggest thing ever.
Yep.
And it was, like they say, it's the biggest in living memory. What the hell does that mean? Aboriginals have been there for 45,000 years.
So no, they don't. They don't count. They don't count.
Well,
it's kind of like you know, the Chinese started maintaining records of astronomical records of things like eclipses and supernovae or novae that you could see in the sky 4,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, Aboriginals would probably have a song about one of them things or another shit.
There you
anyway,
go.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I have to interrupt and just tell you, I've muted. I have the for-profit media TV going in the background, and they have now added the word mauled, M-A-U-L-E-D, to the list of things that were done to Anderson Cooper who ain't got a scratch on him.
Listen, you know what? I was so ill. I had to send that to you. And you know I was rolling when you wrote that back to me. I thought, damn, Bob, you're a bad, bad man. But that shit is funny. It's like, so the hell what? You saw what I wrote. I said, get your ass home and go interview Lindsay Lohan, you dumbass.
Yeah, I stole that one early on, the Lindsay Lohan. Yeah.
You dumb rich boy. You know what I'm saying? Do I care?
I mean,
it's
not that nobody should be over there. He shouldn't be over there.
It's a joke. It's like, I have to say, I was thinking, damn, yeah, your white ass got clobbered. Nobody cared who you were. He got hit 10 times in the head. Why am I laughing? Okay, yeah, I'm getting satisfaction from it. Because it's so absurd. It's like, this dude is making millions. You're not a journalist. You know,
you know what? I want to, this kind of goes back, Sandra, to how I felt about us going into Iraq. Because we couldn't understand why it was that they were managing to blow us up at will, and we couldn't, how are they doing this? Well, we fired all the Arabic translators who happened to be gay, and so we're having a real hard time with the language barrier. So for me, and maybe it's just because I'm crazy, but because I have this little hang-up with real journalism and real reporting, you know what I want? You know who I want to hear from in Egypt? Somebody who speaks Arabic. I don't want to hear about the Calliope music on the streets of Cairo. I want to hear from an Arabic speaker who can go and talk to somebody and said, well, what he just told me was, you know, I like that old model of the journalist, with the torn up army surplus jacket on, and you know, the sort of ducking it. But at least. Granted, they're milking, and you know, I wish they'd take him off the cross because we probably need the wood. But at least he didn't have a Bernie Sanders moment where he crawled under the table and wet himself. Remember when that happened during the first bombing of Baghdad or whatever, the first Iraq war, when the big story was the fact that Bernard Shaw got under the table? Yeah.
Oh no, no. Oh my God! No, I missed that. You know, I missed that. Really?
Yeah, reporting live from a puddle of my own urine. This is Bernard Shaw.
Oh God, no! But the thing is that you know, that situation over there, I can't believe it. I mean, I do believe what's going on, but I thought you did a really good job of describing it as saying, "Here you go. These are the fascists all on display to see how they operate."
Well, I'm tired of pretending there's something they're not.
No, no. P.J. Crowley said, we don't know who's causing the violence. The bitch from the State Department, Bob, came out and said this today.
Yeah, because the protesters have been peaceful for 3 days, but now, you know, the bullshit's over and they're going to the Molotov cocktails.
No,
come on. There's no access to basic services in Egypt. How do you get the gasoline for the Molotov cocktail if you don't have access to gasoline? And the ordinary Egyptians don't.
And not only that, but they've been protesting since Tuesday. You're going to tell me now, all of a sudden, they're doing the violence? You know, it's ridiculous. And you know, I was really disturbed by that comment from the so-called State Department.
But it gets worse in the responses over here, Sandra. You know, of course, who Frank Gaffney is.
Oh, please. That guy.
This man has lost his tiny mind. I mean, he has broken the McCarthy barrier.
Yeah, no, he's really... I heard some of the things that he's been saying. Anyway, what did you hear? What's the latest?
The question, do you think Sharia law has already infiltrated the federal government?
Right, that's right.
Daphne, there are questionable people who are sympathetic to the program of the stealth jihadists who have influence with the United States government. Some, I think, are actually working for it, but for sure, people who are persuaded that the folks that they need to work with to reach out to the Muslim American community, for example, who incessantly turn to the Muslim Brotherhood organizations for that purpose are a very real problem, and I cannot sit by while our precious bodily fluids are polluted and corrupted by these Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, no.
I mean, the guy is gone.
No, it's crazy, but it's just like they have to conflate something into a new Soviet,
oh, but,
I guess.
Well, I mean, no, this is the new McCarthyism. It really is. This is McCarthy in Wheeling, West Virginia, saying, I have here the names of, and he named names, Sandra. This is the horrifying thing.
I saw that he had a name. He had the National Security Advisor was one.
Can you name a few names, for instance, in the federal government? John Brennan. John Brennan is the Homeland Security Advisor for the President of the United States. He's complicit in this creep of Sharia law. He's absolutely daft on what the nature of the threat is and insistent upon using Brotherhood front organizations as sources of information and as vehicles for reaching out to the Muslim American community. And then Jim Clapper, Janet Napolitano.
Right, right. No, that stuff is, I don't even know what to say about it. But the thing is, though, what's really scary is he'll be back on TV, you see?
Oh, hell yeah!
And this is a problem in this country is that, you know, we're sitting here spun out about some freak saying that, but the worst aspect is that they're back on TV.
Yeah, but that's not all with Frank Gaffney. He doubled down, Sandra.
Oh, my God. Well, how can it be any worse than that?
The Muslim Brotherhood is waging an influence operation against the conservative movement.
Okay.
So he went from General Jack D. Ripper to Captain Queeg. Oh, they thought I was crazy, but I fooled them. I caught him with the strawberries.
The strawberries.
God almighty, Sandra.
Shut
And of
up.
Course, he's doing it on Fox. He's doing it on Hannity. And, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood is waging an influence operation against the conservative movement. I've been running my mouth against the conservative movement for over 5 years now, and I still ain't got a check. Come on, Muslim Brotherhood, get with the program.
Just like I'm still waiting for my OJ prize. That's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and Matt Osborne's out there waiting for his George Soros money.
Right.
I mean, I remember when that intrepid young journalist marched all over Netroots Nation in Las Vegas trying to find somebody that was getting a check from George Soros.
Oh, my God. But in the meanwhile, Fox News is sort of the Muslim Brotherhood all the time. And it's just kind of like, come on. The Muslim Brotherhood is, I think its members are hella old, first of all. They don't represent the youth. I mean, it's just bizarre that they latch on to that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, as compared to some of your more violent-oriented organizations, the Muslim Brotherhood are like Lutherans.
And they're just sort of, you know, I don't know. I mean,
you're Al-Qaeda, they're your Southern Baptists.
Yeah, okay, that's a problem, but I'm just sort of, and in fact, I don't know. The Egyptians have a lot more problems than that, okay, at the moment, because this fascist, is like, oh, no, I'm not going any damn where. And what really disturbs me is that, you know, Obama has sent various envoys. They're in the country, and he don't seem to be backing down. In fact, he seems to be escalating. So is this the U.S. saying, oh, no, we got to keep this fool or something similar in place?
That or near about. Oh, my God, I was looking in the chat room, Sandra. I have made a royal horse's ass of myself. In talking about the original Gulf War coverage, I said Bernie Sanders. I meant Bernie Shaw. Shaw.
Yeah, then you followed up by Shaw. I mean, I understood what you were talking about.
But I mean, they won't let me get away with nothing in that daggum chat room. Bernard Shaw, not Bernie Sanders, please, Bob. You know, if there's some little wingnut listening to the program out there, I'm sure this will make it over to, you know, Breitbart or something. You know, Bernie Sanders urinated on himself. God, Jesus.
Well, you know, the headline here is still saying that the protesters are still not leaving.
No, they're not. I mean, I'm looking at live nighttime footage right now, and it's all there. And the really creepy part of it is every now and then you see this fiery arc of somebody lobbing a Molotov cocktail into the crowd. I mean, they are at their dead level, doing their damnedest to try to turn this into a full blown civil war.
No, but I'm just
because then the real knee breakers and skull crackers can come out. Ugly.
No, it's incredible. Maybe I need to ask you a quick question about, because I really don't have any way of analyzing this. But why is it that we're seeing every day information about the Koch brothers and their connection with the Supreme Court, with the Republican Party? Non-stop, every day, there's an article about it. Now, is this because people are just sort of waking up to these folks in particular? Or, I mean, what's going on with it?
I think that's part of it, Sandra, but I also think that it was not known until fairly recent. I mean, everybody knew that they were evil bastards.
But didn't that Jane Mayer do this report in the New York, whatever, one of those magazines?
Yeah, and Common Cause all of a sudden has gotten very active. Because Common Cause got and the whole thing was engendered not so much by the general rubric of the Koch brothers are bastards, but by the Koch brothers are bastards who have secretly been buying the Supreme Court all along.
Right.
It's that nexus that has elevated them to the spotlight status.
No, and this seems to be the sort of double-edged sword of the Citizens United, because I guess people are going to have to figure out some way of fighting back and, you know, outing them at every turn, I guess, is one way. But they don't seem to be liking it too much. That's one thing for sure.
No, I mean, they had their own thugs there at their meeting in Riverside.
Right. And it was going to be interesting that they, you know, I mean, okay, we are in America, but that was a pretty healthy turnout. I was really quite pleased.
Oh, yeah. And meaningful, too.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those situations where you can show up and go away and it makes a difference. It's not like getting 50,000 people on the mall who are gone by Saturday evening.
Yeah, right. No. I just, you know, and I just wonder if you had a... because now I'm just seeing another headline that Paul Ryan spoke at some Koch event. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
And I think the point here... Is that there is nobody that does not have, there's no right winger that somehow along the way doesn't have his hand inside the Koch brothers' pockets, and it's not just that they're out there funding this scurrilous business. You know, I remember Richard Mellon Scaife. I'm sure you do too. You know, that evil bastard put together what was it called, the Arkansas Project?
Yeah,
that was the one where Paul Begala said they were dragging $100 bills through Arkansas trailer parks.
Right.
And that was nasty. But the Koch brothers make Richard Mellon Scaife look like a piker and an amateur because they quit fooling around. They ain't fooling around. They went straight up and straight out, bought them some Supreme Court justices, and they have been flat caught now.
Yeah,
there's another side to this coin, because I have some experience dealing with some online right-wingers and people I grew up with and so forth. And in the midst of an argument the other day, I mentioned the Koch brothers. And the response back was, well, that's just as silly as what people say about George Soros. But it's not, Sandra. The stuff about George Soros is made up out of whole cloth. The stuff about the Koch brothers is documented, it carved in stone, irrefutable fact.
Well, no. So, you know, I'm way past the both sides thing, and this is the point that I point out to. Both sides ain't the NFL celebrating fucking Reagan at halftime. Have you heard about that?
No.
Yes.
Oh, is this? I guess this just ties in with the bobbleheads and the jelly beans, right?
Yeah. Apparently, they're doing some sort of tribute.
Oh, to mark the 100th birthday of the Gipper.
It's a private corporation. I'm stunned here. I'm like, are you kidding me with this?
and it's halftime with the giant flag, and
Who knows what it is? I don't know all the details, and I was going to look into it but I was just more stunned. I'm like,
yeah, but let's not run any ads about let them play.
No, but are we going to deify FDR? I mean, it's just bullshit.
Well, no, the answer to that is no. We're not going.
I just thought it was, every year with the NFL lately, there's some ode to the right,
Yeah. But isn't that, to go back to the original theme of the program tonight, Sandra, isn't that one of those 14 defining characteristics of fascism?
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess I'm just sort of so sick of being tarred in some sort of equal way. I'm done with it because this country is totally right, as far as the for-profit media goes.
Yeah, well, yeah, and again, that's why I made the argument at the top of the show. Let's quit tap dancing around this. We are dealing with full on fascism.
It's incredible.
I'm not going to sit here and say Obama is a fascist. I don't think he is. But there is a massive tide of fascism sweeping through this country that hopes to wash him the hell away.
No, I think so too. And also, I'm really getting quite sick of being told that the internet is some sort of, horizontal democratizing entity. I'm done with that too. I realize it may not tie in, but it's just such a load.
Well, if it's democratizing, everybody's talked about that. I do respect the efforts that were made to keep information flowing out of Egypt, even when the crackdown was put on.
Oh, yeah.
And did you find it interesting that they're reporting, some of the internets have been turned back on in Egypt today? Well, guess why? Because you had to get the messages out there to tell the shock troops and the brown shirts to round up Bessie and old Trigger and get the whips out.
Well, no. Like I always said before, the internet is great for organizing ideas and bringing people together until it's not.
Well, okay, I got to share this with you. This is a font right now on CNN, analyzing how a revolution goes bad. Demonstrations in Tahrir Square turn violent.
Oh, see, they've just been waiting for it. Listen, that's why I was. I don't know if you listened to Mike Malloy, but he was like, just hold on a little bit, you'll get it, when he was talking about the reporters over there just waiting. Where's the blood, And it's kind of, So I have to give it to old Malloy. He's been on this shit. He has been solid, his shows lately, So I can't wait to hear it tonight because he'll be just going off about, here we are,
Yeah.
And I'm sick. I'm sick in the heart with this business in Egypt. But, as a student of international relations, it's textbook, man. Textbook.
But you've got to be extra super duper wide awake, and I don't mean you, Sandra, you are, to notice that all of this that's going on there, much of it is being very, very carefully manipulated by the other side. I mean, I just got a few minutes ago, I got one of those right-wing interview pitches that just floods my email box. U.S. needs to stand up for Egyptian Christians, persecution and murder target, unless Obama sends strong signal. Well, I guess, and this is asking me to interview some clown by the name of Jim Jacobson, president of the Michigan-based humanitarian organization Christian Freedom International, who is available to be your talk show guest. No, but the point, I guess they missed that story where all the Muslims stood as human shields in front of the mosques and said, it doesn't matter whether you're Christian or you're Muslim, you have a right to worship. No, they missed that. But no, this is what they're. If a Christian in Egypt stubs his toe, Obama is personally unleashing a Muslim Brotherhood jihad on the Christian population, or blah blah blah, with never a damn word, Sandra, never a damn word about the fact that the Bush administration murdered and drove out of Iraq the oldest Christian community on the planet.
Yeah, exactly. That is so true. And also, weren't they chanting Christian, Muslim, we're all Egyptian? I mean, give me a damn break.
Yeah, there was that.
And the way you're saying that CNN has that thing on, I mean, they couldn't wait to, like, now portray this.
Yeah, and they left that font up there for 5 solid minutes.
No, and so now it's some sort of violence, which means what? What does that mean? And the idea that they're trying to say we're not too sure where the violence is coming from, all that is just a ploy, you know, to get it back under control in the way that they want it to be.
Hear, hear. Sandra, I got a roll. We've managed to stack up the lines, you and I.
Good. That's good. That's good.
That's okay, a good thing. You have it. You take care. Have a great week and a half. And
oh yeah, you know you enjoy. So
gonna try.
Make sure you do some swimming.
Yeah. You wanted to get me burnt.
Oh no, just take the precautions, but you can't miss that water. Anyway, have a wonderful trip.
All right, thank you, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from California. That's our buddy Sandra. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
I just wanted to wish you a great trip. That sounds very exciting.
I hope it is. It's a total de-stressor.
When does it leave?
We actually leave port on Saturday evening.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Leave Saturday, get back Saturday. Whoa.
I bet in addition to all the beauty of the water and the land, the islands and all that, you'll see some remarkable stars at night.
You know, it's interesting you would mention that because Jim just wrote me an email a little bit ago, and he said, you will, on the Bortle darkness scale, you will be afforded a view of the night sky that is spectacular while at sea.
Great. Excellent. One of the most remarkable night skies I ever saw was, I must have been in like middle school, and I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and some friends of mine, their dad had gone to school at Dartmouth, I think, yeah, in New Hampshire, and we drove there during the winter for a week of skiing and hanging out, and I got out of the car in this New Hampshire countryside and looked up at the sky and was just...
And all of a sudden, it was totally different from the sky in Philly.
It was.
We have some incredibly clear nights. We've got a lot of light pollution off to the south of us. But if you turn your back to it and look at the night sky, I mean, you begin to understand, among other things, why the Milky Way is called the Milky Way.
Yeah.
It looks like a pitcher of milk has been spilled across the night sky.
Yeah, amazing. A couple of things regarding Egypt. Jodi Evans, I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's with Code Pink.
Yes.
The founders.
Yes.
Yeah. And a Facebook friend, I'm proud to say. And she just made a comment about how Madea Benjamin of Code Pink is in Tahrir Square right now.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of her experiences while there is to have these Egyptian women come up to her and they, I think some of them recognize her, you know, because they've gotten international press in the past. In fact, I was in Mexico at one point and Code Pink made the Mexican news, I think, over a protest because of, you know, Israel was bombing Lebanon in 2006. But anyway, right now in Egypt, Medea is being approached by these, well, I'm sure men too, but women in particular are coming up to her and hugging and kissing and just thrilled that she's there and others are there in solidarity with them and saying, you know, contact Obama and make sure, you know, he pulls money from the Mubarak regime now, you know, to save lives, they're saying, you know, because, you know, pull the funds and, you know, in addition to ending the material support of all this military-industrial complex welfare money they get that they feel they're so entitled to, you know, speaking of entitlement sense, in addition to cutting that off and cutting off the tear gas and all the rest of it, it sends such a message, you know. So I just wanted to mention the good work they're doing, and I think the good work that Anderson Cooper is doing. I mean, certainly a lot of the stuff that goes on CNN and some of the stuff he does.
Well, I just wish he would have stayed home. I really do. I mean, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but there's a place, and he's not a journalist, or at least he's not that kind of journalist.
Yeah, and I'm more than happy to disagree. We can disagree. And I actually woke up this morning and caught his reporting from Cairo, and was appreciative. You know, it could have been just about anybody, maybe not a journalist, but.
Well, the sad thing is, from my perspective, Preston, the sad thing about Anderson Cooper is that the incident in which he was involved is now being used to propel a theme that we're seeing on CNN even as we speak of, you know, this revolution has gone bad.
There is that problem if, you know, some people can control the narratives around it. It can also be used to say, you know, I think one of the headlines I saw around it was pro-Mubarak group assaults Anderson Cooper. So it could be used to make, you know, the pro-Mubarak crowd look, you know, kind of vicious. Although, you know, who knows? I mean, the chaos of this stuff, you know, you can get
what I find. What I find most telling out of this is, you know, you've had some coverage by MSNBC has picked up Al Jazeera from time to time. And frankly, that's whom we should be watching, is Al Jazeera. Because that's where I think you're going to get the most honest level of real journalism, because they have proven over time, you know, in excess of, 20 years now since the first Gulf War? They've proven that they are a real, legitimate news organization.
Yep.
You know, despite the fact that it's, I guess, deemed terroristic to have it on your cable system in America.
Yeah, probably get on some Homeland Security list for watching it. But fortunately, apparently their visits to their website of Al Jazeera English has gone up over 2,000%, and 60% of that increase has been from the U.S., so, you know, people wonder, you know, can something like this sort of revolution can take place here in the U.S.? And who knows? And you spoke to some of the reasons why maybe it wouldn't, but there is a sort of evolution that I think inevitably will take place. I mean, for instance, people just learning about the history of U.S. relations with Egypt and our foreign policy generally that's supported so many dictators in that region, and also Africa and Latin America. So people's consciousness, awareness is growing. People are seeking more information, and Al Jazeera is picking up a lot more audience members. And it was so good to see Democracy Now, actually, one of their chief producers, his name's Sharif Abdel Qaddous, I think, who's in Cairo as well. He was on Ed Schultz's show the other day, and I think Rachel Maddow. So there's this collaboration going on, networking, that's really good to see between progressive organizations. And I think it's influencing people like Anderson Cooper. For all his flaws, I think he's a curious fellow, and I think that takes guts to be there on the ground, and I'm sure it's kind of
I don't challenge his courage one bit.
Yeah. I'll give him credit for that as well.
I hope it just doesn't spawn something where eventually they decide to send Piers Morgan. I thought I was gonna have kittens when all day last Friday during the day they kept running the promo. You know, here's Egypt. You know, in the birth spasms of freedom, and CNN keeps running this promo saying, "And tonight on Piers Morgan, a canned interview with Colin Firth."
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, is the managing editor asleep?
You know, I look at Fox from time to time just to see what they're up to. And
it's all Muslim Brotherhood all the time.
Yeah, and you mentioned Frank Gaffney. He's been doing the rounds of right-wing radio for years, and I guess he has his own show now, his own radio show.
Yeah, but he's completely lost his mind at this point, hasn't he?
Well, that whole, again, back to the military-industrial complex. It's a psychotic mindset.
And, you know, the other thing that fascists do, Preston, is they are extremely astute at manipulating messaging. So
yeah.
if we, for instance, reference Jimmy Carter's book, Palestine Peace, Not Apartheid, for which he is now being sued.
Really?
Yeah. He's being sued by someone saying, oh, it's inaccurate. A class action lawsuit by a Manhattan lawyer, no less. So it's become actually rather typical to use the word apartheid in the description of how the Palestinians and the, particularly the people in Gaza are treated by the Israeli government. Well, okay, so shift gears real quick, and you know that Mike Huckabee, former Arkansas governor and shameless publicity publicity hound, probably shouldn't say hound considering what his son did to that dog, and you know he's a 2012 presidential wannabe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he proudly attended the groundbreaking and cornerstone laying of a new Israeli settlement in occupied East Jerusalem.
Disgraceful.
Yes. Well, but not to be outdone, the right wing is very, very astute at taking our frames and either turning them on their ears, witness Islamofascism and Jonah Goldberg's argument a couple of years back that Hitler was really a socialist. Remember that one?
Yeah, his book, Left Fascism or Liberal Fascism. Or
right.
Something
well,
like that.
Huckabee did something similar today. He declared that opposing Israeli settlements in the occupied territories amounts to racism and apartheid. Apartheid, Preston. Apartheid.
Right. They're co-opting or trying to use that word themselves.
Right, because that way they can take the force out of it. The same way that they scream Nazi, 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 Nazi about people on the so-called left, but the minute that we make an accurate comparison, say what Steve Cohen did on the on the floor of the House, talking about Goebbels and the big lie, and the way the right wing has responded to the Affordable Care Act, and a complete firestorm ensues because the right wing has anticipatorily neutered the word and taken it for themselves, and they are the only ones who can define it, just like, as I mentioned early in the program, they're the only ones who can act based upon conscience.
Yeah, yeah, and they do. They are very conscious about that sort of messaging, anticipating things. Sometimes they're having to respond to narratives that bother them, and that's, I think, what I was getting at regarding Rush and his mocking Chinese people and the sexism and all that.
Right. And by the way, he recently referred to President Obama as the Pharaoh.
All right, okay.
See, that's another one of those moments, because there is an actual Pharaoh, because Hosni Mubarak is acting in pharaonic fashion.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, in a way, the Bush dynasty, you know, the father, the son, all that stuff. Yeah, but again, Rush had to, he was getting so much heat that, you know, the directors and all that felt the need to at least respond, because his brand or his marketing, his image was getting a lot of hits. And so they had to respond very defensively. And, you know, and that's good to see. I think they are more on the defensive these days. In fact, one of Rush's arguments used in a promo that he did was something like, isn't it amazing? Just put the liberal media leaves out. And I think it was Orwell who said something about really effective propaganda doesn't lie so much as it omits.
Right, sins of omission, exactly.
Yeah, and I think Rush and his handlers were getting a sense that people are finding democracy now. They're finding Ed Schultz and what are some of the other, Link TV, Free Speech TV.
Sure.
More people are finding Al Jazeera. And then they're going back to Rush and saying to themselves or to others, you know, he's just leaving so much out. So Rush, in this promo, when I heard him say the liberal media is leaving so much out, I think he's very much speaking to his own concerns of how...
Right, and turning a frame on its head and turning it to his own use.
And I don't think it's always going to work. In fact, I think a lot of their tactics are going to be less effective for them. You know, they're going to try these things, but... I think people are moving on, and many, you know, we all know people who are hooked on Fox, you know, a cult-like dedication to that crap.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, its political arguments, I think, are only going to be so effective I think there's a lot going on kind of psychologically. I mean, if you've been listening to Fox and Rush for the past decade and telling people about it and really committing yourself emotionally to it, to turn around and be able to say, you know, my life has been an utter deception. I've been following an utter lie. That's very difficult emotionally. And some people can process it, okay. Others are going to resist and resist and resist, you know, maybe for the rest of their lives. But so it's frustrating and saddening to see, but that's going to happen sometimes. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who are more flexible and are open to stuff. And even to the people who resist what we might have to say regarding progressive information or whatever, I like to keep in mind this quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes. Do you remember?
Oh, yes.
Who's a mixed bag himself, for sure, but he made a comment I like to keep in mind, something about one's mind, once stretched by a new idea, never regains its original dimensions. So, I don't know.
And right, and the right-wing effort is to, the fascist effort is to make sure that that mind never stretches, that it admits only of received wisdom. Preston, thank you very much. I've got a bunch of blinkers here, and with me not being on the air for a while, I want to try to reach as many as I can. But
definitely.
Thank you very kindly, and you have a wonderful evening.
Again, happy travels.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Looking forward
Bye.
To it. Bye now. Preston, calling from Denver, the Horns resident optimist. And we continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. What's up?
Just a few things here. Number one, you will be afforded a spectacular view of the night sky if you are at the probably 300 miles away from a light source.
Wow.
And you will be able to see spectacular things.
Yeah, we
and
will.
And I want to say something that may be considered controversial, and this dovetails on what David was saying about leisure and the necessity of workers having a leisure time and vacations and things of that nature. I mean, now don't take me wrong here, okay?
Okay.
During the salad days of the Third Reich with Hitler, even the German labor front realized the necessity of workers having a vacation. And they had like 2 or 3 week vacations planned for their workers on cruise ships that went into the West Indies and all over the world.
You're absolutely right. One of those cruises was, workers' cruises was aboard the St. Louis.
And another, of course, was under the liners were built for that, like the Wilhelm Gustloff, the one that the Soviets torpedoed when they were evacuating people in the last days of Hitler's Germany. But at least making a pretense of respecting the worker, they at least afforded them the dignity of having a 2 or 3 week vacation at very minimal cost, and it was one of their leading programs. You know, of course, before everything.
And the Soviet Union as well, of course. We heard a lot about the Black Sea vacations for Soviet workers.
At Sochi, and the Russian Riviera.
But in the case of Germany, Jim, wasn't that vacation time at least in part a function of the rather forward-thinking of Bismarck, who also gave rise to the very first workers' compensation program in the world?
Well, I'm sure it could have been because a lot of things have been copied.
And it's subsequently translated. You know, one of the few things that the East Germans and the West Germans could agree on, even during the days of the Iron Curtain, is that workers on either side of it, for all the repression of the East, those vacations were still in place.
Exactly. And at least they recognized the importance of giving a guy a day off and a time to have some time to himself. And I don't see that really happening in this country. That's the reason I'm making the contrast. I'm not praising the Third Reich in any way, shape, or form, and I think you know that.
Yes.
But I think, I couldn't help but pointing out the strength through joy cruises of the German labor front.
Yeah. And meanwhile, at the same time that Bismarck was creating the world's first workers' compensation system, Jim, at the same time, here in the United States, in the steel mills in Pittsburgh, the work week was literally 72 hours long. That was 6 days of 12 hours a day, and you got Sunday off for church.
Right. And even during the salad days of the Third Reich, they cleaned up their factories. I mean, they made their factories clean. They had great cafeterias. They landscaped them, and they made the place for the worker to go to be a lot less onerous.
Well, consider the model city that was envisioned around the first Volkswagen plant.
Exactly, at Wolfsburg, I believe.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't see that happening, or I don't see even American corporations having that kind of conscience.
No, because they've gone way past that, because now we're in the productivity zone.
Yeah.
And we're all going to chop that sugar cane till one day we fall dead.
You know, it's ironic that as repressive as those regimes were, they had sense enough to realize that men were not machines and needed a break and needed something to look forward to and needed a vacation. And I just don't see that happening in this country. I see it going toward the other direction. What they want to do is they probably want to have a seven-day work week, and, you know, if you can't hack that, to hell with you.
Well, when the right wing, when the fascists finally get their way, and there are no more labor unions in this country, what recourse will a worker have save to work as long as his boss says to work? Frankly, that six day 12-hour work week is already a reality for far too many Americans, and there is no vacation, there's no health insurance, there's no social safety net, and those 12-hour work days are made up by working, and sometimes there's 16-hour work days, and they're made up by working two minimum wage jobs on the parts of both parents. Remember when the woman in Minnesota told George Bush that she worked three jobs a week, and he laughed that evil little smirky laugh of his and said, "Well, that's uniquely American." Remember that?
Uniquely American. Yes, I remember it. And yet, you know,
apparently he thinks unique always by definition means good. It don't.
No, it doesn't. Unique can mean a number of things, like remarkable. That's another word.
or incredible.
Oh, yeah. But remarkable is another one that sticks upon me.
You put that all in that same laundry list right there. I think the one that has to head that list, Jim, is all deliberate speed. People originally read that in Brown versus Board of Education, or maybe it was another case. All deliberate speed. That means we got to get this done quickly. But then a couple of people who were paying attention to language read it and went, wait a minute. All deliberate speed? That means deliberate means methodically, ploddingly, slow. So the Supreme Court had created an oxymoron and said that integration of the schools in America should be accomplished by all slow speed.
Isn't it incredible how language, particularly when applied to the law and the implementation of the law, can be so manipulated?
Oh, you know what? That old saying that the right wing was so fond of during the Clinton impeachment. Well, you know, words mean things. Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Hey, Jim, I have to roll because I want to hit a couple more blinking lights, but I'm glad I got a chance to chat with you before we head off. Well, thank you very much, and you started something because I've had three or four different emails now saying, yeah, Jim's right about the night sky. And Maura just wrote to say, take binoculars if you got them.
Okay, Bob.
All right, take care, Jim. Bye now. That's our buddy Jim, and we cruise onward. Cruise, see, that's a pun. Cruise. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Pat.
Hey, Pat, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Well, I had to catch you before you...
Got any of those Mark Twains left?
No, I have three left.
They're not bad sticks.
No, it's just been so damn cold, and they're such a large cigar that it's just...
Yeah, you really... It's a Churchill, and you really don't have the hour and a half to sit out in sub-zero weather and enjoy one on the veranda.
No, not at all. That's why I have three left instead of... You know, 'cause I only had... I think my father-in-law gave me six of them for Christmas. But I have limited experience in the Caribbean. I been to Barbados twice, and I love it. I want to be there now.
Well, Agnes and I have been joking about how we may very well disembark at Grand Turk and just go hide for a while.
Yeah.
Till the boat leaves.
Yeah. Well, we're sitting here looking at almost 4 feet of snow in our yard, which is crazy because we haven't had any melt at all, you know. And we've been getting storm after storm. We had two storms this week. We had two storms last week. It's all piling up. It's crazy.
So, and getting pretty sickening, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, I had 2 days of working from home yesterday and today, and it's not easy with you know the twin 6 year olds running around getting actual work done. It's kind of tough. So.
Are they? And I guess the snow's too deep for them to really get much meaningful play in the snow time in, right?
Well, you know they've been sick because you know they're in kindergarten this year and.
Oh dear God! You've entered the viral swamp.
Yeah, so they were sick the whole Christmas break.
Oh, bless their little hearts.
And they started coming down with this last Thursday, and they finally Annie relented and took them outside today. And while she decided to run the snow thrower instead of breaking up my day and having me do it. And they were out running around and falling through the crust and going up to their you know shoulders and they were having fun. But, you know.
Well, I tell you what, I remember those days of when the kids first entered the public school system and immediately were. I mean, it's almost like European when the Indians were first subjected to disease-bearing Europeans. It's just that they enter the public school system, and all of a sudden, your smiling, happy, healthy little children are just sick.
Yeah.
And it's awful. And by the way, Agnes just gave me Agnes sign language for please give the twins a big hug and a kiss for her.
Okay. Well, it seems I've been lucky in that the last two colds they got I must have been exposed to previously, but Annie's gotten hit by the last two colds that they had, and so it's not been fun for Annie either.
No, all you can do is dip everybody in Purell, you know, by the heel, and hope for the best. And even that's not such a good idea because eventually they get immune to that too.
That's true. It is. So I'm a week behind on the podcast, but that's good because that'll give me something to listen to while you're gone. I'm presuming you guys have been talking about Egypt and.
Oh yeah.
But I saw some goofball in West Virginia wanted to is proposing a secession. Did you see that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what he wants to do is he wants to let the Eastern Panhandle vote to get the hell out of West Virginia.
Yeah,
because and he's a right. You're right. You're absolutely correct, Patrick. He's a right wing nut job, and his argument is West Virginia is just too unfriendly for business, and we need to be part of Virginia again. We want to be in the Old Dominion. Right, because West Virginia is unfriendly to business. That's why they blow up mountains here, because they're real friendly to business in other states and. They got mountain. Even Tennessee. I mean, they've got some mountaintop removal problems of their own, but they don't let them do valley fills there, and they don't let them do massive sludge dams there because the state government actually values its mountains because lots of people come down from up north to see them. But we'd rather blow ours up. Mind-boggling. Patrick, it's good to talk to you. It's been too long. When I get back, I hope you will be not so much of a stranger. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'll try. The one thing, did you see that story from the University of Alabama? The students claiming they're gonna if I guess the University of Alabama is talking about strip mining some of their property.
Yes,
the students have banded together and have said they'll you know.
Well, I have a feeling with the University of Alabama being in Tuscaloosa, a good friend of mine who's been on the program and just a dynamo of activism, our buddy John Wathen. He's the Hurricane Creek keeper down there, and he happens to be very familiar with Tuscaloosa County and the western part of Jefferson County. They're contiguous there. And I got a feeling that he can tell them all they might ever want to know about the effects of strip mining. So I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he wasn't doing a little educating and missionary work along the way.
Yeah. This is a very important fight, and it's important for everyone. And you, everybody who's listening knows that, so I don't need to say it again. But have a great trip.
Well, thank you, Pat, and by all means, I hope the boys get to feeling better, and I hope Annie gets to feeling better too. And I guess I've got some sort of an inner Yenta, because I still have this hopes of setting up the arranged marriage between your twins and Albert's twin girls.
You know, I was thinking about that, you know,
because they're the same age. It all works out perfectly. It's almost like the hand of providence.
Yeah, that was one of the, and you know, the other thing was that I was thinking was Sam Cedar's got a daughter that's around the boy's age, and so does Mike Malloy, and so I thought maybe that.
Oh well, okay, so they've got a pool to choose from.
Yeah.
Patrick, you take care, my friend.
All right, you too, Bob.
Enjoy one of those Mark Twains as quick as the weather clears.
Well, I'm going to go down the Cape this weekend for my father-in-law's birthday, so we're gonna try to sneak out into the garage and enjoy one of those then. So.
Sounds good. You take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye, Bob.
And one more blinking light here, and then we'll close things out. Just a quick reminder, seriously, when Tom wrote in earlier, he was right. Usually, if I miss a show or a couple of shows, the fundraising, it just becomes barren as a desert, and we wind up brokered in the Ten Commandments, poor as Job's turkey, as they would say. So I implore you, please. Just because I'm gone doesn't mean that the horn doesn't have bills. If you can, please contribute so that I won't sit there worrying about late notices when I get back and Boss Man Wayne won't begin to drum his fingers on the desk wondering, you know, if the internet's going to get turned off or the phones are going to go dark or stuff like that. We have to raise $2,500 a month, and that equates on a 7-day week to about $90 a day, and that works out, and it also works out to about $625 a week. Please, it would be awfully nice by the time I get back on around the 14th of get back on the air around the 14th of February, if you could be so kind as to for us to have actually made the 2-week fundraising goal. Not gonna beat on it, not gonna hammer on it. I'm just gonna ask pretty please, just so the horn can keep going. It would be great. It would be so cool if we made the first 2 months of 2011 and actually made the fundraising goal. I can't express how cool that would be. And I hope there's still somebody here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm the grandson of a union coal miner from southern Illinois, and I grew up next door to a coal plant in Illinois on the property itself. Actually, my old man ran the plant eventually, but and that same grandfather went on to become a National League umpire. And
oh, cool.
He was the president of National League Umpires Union, and then so that would make me an ex-Marine and a union worker in the modern workforce. And for the listeners that aren't paying attention to what's going on in Cairo, I would share with them that Egypt has more unionized workers than the United States does.
That is true.
Percentages, and you know, a lot of Americans think that we union workers must have copied the Russians, but actually, I think they got Mayday from us, and the colors red and black may come from your hills of West Virginia. So I say God bless West Virginia, and I would also share with the listeners to please take a look at the USS Liberty case, where the Egyptians wanted to keep their oil nationalized for the profits of their citizens, and with the help of Israel, at the request of the oil corporations and the globalists, President Lyndon Baines Johnson let 140 sailors and Marines get wounded by two Israeli jets for over an hour, flew out there. They still have the flag, the American flag, which they hoisted up under attack, that has multiple large caliber machine gun holes in it, and they killed over 40 Americans in that attack. And as the ship was listing, they thought it was going down. A couple choppers came out to make sure that it was going away, and it didn't go away. But all the Americans involved, from the highest-ranking admirals to the lowest sailors, realized what occurred to them.
And they were silenced for years on end.
That's a fact. And and if you look at the folks in the crowd, the one caller you had earlier was talking about Democracy Now, and of course their producer is actually in the crowd, and he's probably still there. He is of Egyptian descent, and he's not. You made me laugh about Anderson Cooper. I felt the same way. It's just I can't watch him at the New Year's thing and then see him over there and be.
Yeah,
serious.
I think that's it. I think that's it. You know, because it's so serious. And this is the guy who was yucking it up and cracking wise with Kathy Griffin. No,
yeah.
I tell you, I got to roll real quick. And I'm sorry, I don't recognize your voice. First name, please.
I'm Mark.
Oh, okay, Mark. Thank you.
I'm a union guy, and I'm a union, a former union organizer. So I'm 100% worker for, and I'm also an 11-year veteran of the Marine Corps.
Wow.
Anyway,
wow.
God bless you.
Well, thank you very kindly, Mark. I do appreciate it.
Appreciate what you do for the actual patriots in this country by the knowledge that you seem to have, sir. I respect you.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly, and I hope you won't be a stranger. Dial in any time, and I hope the next time we've got a little more time to work with.
All right, sir.
Take care. Bye now. And it's time for me to get out. Time to go pack up the Aloha shirt. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Everybody. No time for credits this evening. Because Rick Smith is on the way from Pennsylvania, and hopefully along the way some of the shows will actually be hosted in this time slot by the inimitable John Fox. So as the saying goes, watch this space. Thanks, everybody. Have fun. We're going to try. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.